Welcome to Record Roulette. My name is Eamon O'Flynn. I'm here with Nathan Smith and Sonia Walton to discuss another album from the Rolling Stone 500 Greatest Albums list that we've chosen at random. This episode is coming out on the cusp of summer. We're almost there. Here in Canada, it has finally stopped snowing. Probably. What better way to celebrate than listening to an album that produced the song of summer for 2013? Yes, we're talking about Daft Punk's fourth and final studio album, Random Access Memories, which takes number 295 on the Rolling Stone 500 Greatest Albums list. Were either of you familiar with this album, or is it new to you, Nathan?
I wasn't familiar with the album, but I was familiar with, obviously, at least one song on the album, as you alluded to there, Eamon, in your opening. It was hard not to be familiar with that song, as it was everywhere. But I think I don't remember realizing that that was Daft Punk. I just sort of thought it was Pharrell. I didn't realize it was Daft Punk featuring Pharrell and others. So not familiar with the album, knew that song, but didn't really know anything else about what I was in for.
I thought you were talking about Doing It Right featuring Panda Bear. So I thought that's the song of summer, right? That was the song of summer? Doing It Right, everybody will be dancing.
Maybe an evening during summer, right? I think maybe for a few hours.
For a few hours?
Yeah. Hours.
I'm kidding, right. Sonia, you were a big Daft Punk fan, right? You were in 2013.
Absolutely.
You were probably like, this is the greatest album in the world.
In 2013, my son would have been about 14. So
he was into it.
We heard this around the house quite a bit. So yes, familiar with the album.
Are you suggesting it was for 14-year-olds?
No, I'm suggesting it was for all sorts of folks.
All ages.
Of all ages. From all walks of life.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the end of the sentence. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, wasn't do I sure. need to?
This was. Yep. She's accidentally turning on and off mute now. So we'll just continue on. So for me, I listened to this album probably 16,000 times.
Oh my goodness, you know this one.
Yes, I know this one. I know this one probably
better. Hold on,
better.
I need to drop a glass.
I hesitate to say this because of how offensive it is that we've talked about a bunch of Beatles albums. And I might have listened to this album more than any other album we've talked about on this podcast.
Are you saying that Daft Punk is bigger than the Beatles?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And they're bigger than Jesus, which means Daft Punk.
Wow.
Is closing in really? On the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Part of the Holy Trinity.
Yes.
That's surprising. I would not have assumed that you had heard this, let alone had heard it thousands of times. That's surprising.
Nor would I. This is a shock. This is a shock of the season.
Here's what I think happened, because I actually can't completely remember why I know this album so well. Like,
my guess is that you've heard it 15,000 times.
But I mean, what I mean is, like, I don't know why I would have listened to it. It does seem out of character to me. My only guess is that right before this, Tron Legacy came out, it has a great soundtrack. I got that soundtrack and I played it in my car when I had an hour and 20 minute commute each way every day for a job. And so I listened to that like crazy. And then this came out, and I have to believe what happened was I then went out and bought this and then just started listening to it. And then it was just happening. It was all around. I remember how excited people were. Like, I literally would go into the office and people were like, yeah, this is great. I remember going to a guy's house and he was like, okay, I know everyone's talking about, you know, this song or that song, but you got to listen to this one. And I'm like, is it Touch featuring Paul Williams? And he was like, yes, how did you know? And I was like, because it's the greatest. But
that's beautiful.
It's crazy. So I, for whatever reason, this album makes no sense with any other things that I've listened to apart from the soundtrack by Daft Punk, but it's one of the most listened albums of my entire life.
So was this album chosen at random, Eamon, or did you choose it?
It was chosen at random.
Okay.
Yeah, you're saying that as though I'm going to give it a great review, but who knows? Maybe mid-20s Eamon was a real dumbass. Mid-30s Eamon is.
I mean,
it had to have started somewhere.
Yeah, so when did it start? Okay, for those who aren't familiar as I am with this album, let me give you a quick overview. It was released in 2013 by French electronic duo Daft Punk, who pretend that they're robots. Random Access Memories pays tribute to the late 1970s and early 1980s. Unlike their previous efforts, the album primarily uses live instrumentation. It was an immediate hit, becoming the only Daft Punk album to top the US Billboard 200, though it wasn't their only album to receive a platinum certification. That was done by the aforementioned soundtrack for Tron Legacy, which is fantastic. The lead single, Get Lucky, was a massive hit that topped the charts in 30 countries, and the album went on to win 5 Grammy Awards.
My goodness.
It had mostly glowing reviews, too, though there are more recent retrospectives that haven't been as kind because it just passed its 10-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. It is one of 2 Daft Punk albums on the Rolling Stone list, with Discovery coming in at number 236. On the list, it is just behind Weezer's Blue Album and the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Californication, and just ahead of Neil Young's Rust Never Sleeps and Brian Eno's Here Come the Warm Jets.
I thought the Weezer album would be higher.
I thought it wouldn't be anywhere near the list, but...
Okay.
Really?
Is that the guy who likes Oasis?
Like, we're here to talk about Daft Punk, right? Let's stay focused.
Yes, we are.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. Let's stay focused.
Late at night. It is late at night when we are recording.
On the East Coast for all of our West Coast listeners.
Yeah. Yep. So it'll be much earlier for them when they're listening to this.
Yes.
Okay. And broad strokes, did you like this album or not, Nathan?
Come on.
I'm giving you extra time to think, Sonia. Come on.
It's not going to get any better.
Teamwork here, all right? We're both rooting against Nathan.
We know our roles by now. It's late in the season. No, I wouldn't say I disliked it, but I didn't like it a lot. I think it's generally, given sort of, you know, how critically acclaimed this album is and Daft Punk is in general, I was expecting more than what I heard. I thought it would be, I guess what surprised me the most, and we can get into it obviously in greater detail, but sort of in broad strokes, what surprised me the most was how, to my ears, unimaginative this was based on what I was expecting. I thought they were sort of, you know, a group that pushed the envelope and would explore different sounds. And there's bits and pieces and there's flourishes of that. But I think by and large, it succeeds, at least sort of critically, because it's, and we've seen this, we've seen other examples in albums we've reviewed, it's such a left turn for this group. But just because Daft Punk is using sort of live instrumentation for the first time largely in their career, and it's new and interesting for them, doesn't make it new and interesting for those who are kind of used to hearing live instrumentation. It's like, okay, it's almost like I figure, what would the reverse be? If a largely, you know, drum, guitar, bass group decided they're going to explore in sort of electronic music and they're doing very rudimentary electronica, I think electronica fans would say, good for you. I'm glad you're trying something. But this, we were doing this, you know, 25 years ago.
What if it was like maybe like a guy who was part of a big band, maybe the band even had a name. It was such a big deal, that band. And then like he went and did like an acoustic album.
Don't you fucking start tonight.
And then it was called Nebraska.
I suppose that would apply.
It's similar. I mean, it's a person doing a different thing. It's important for them, but is it important for the world? Who knows? Sonia.
Yes, it is. First of all, yes, it is. Secondly, to address the album we are discussing tonight and not go off on random tangents. Where Nathan wanted more, I think I wanted less. I enjoyed the album, but I frankly I think it's a little bloated. I think some of the songs are just a little too self-indulgent and a little bit long. And so I, like, there are songs that I really, really enjoyed. And then I was like, well, these 2 minutes could just fuck right off. Like, I'm not a music expert. Mm-hmm. And I've never claimed to be one, but it felt a little bit fat, like a little chubby.
I agree entirely with that. I didn't have the word chubby in my notes, but I can see where you're going because I agree. I think that the thing that sort of stuck out to me in terms of just the length of the songs, I don't mind longer songs as long as there are things happening. But to me, it felt like these were a lot of sort of 90-second to 2-minute ideas that were just stretched into 5 or 6-minute songs. And they just kind of keep this groove going. And it's, even if you have a groove and you kind of build on it and add things to it, that's okay. Like if you're not sort of dramatically shifting the structure of the song, as long as you're adding things. I mean, The Cure was, I think, a great example of an album that we reviewed where it had a groove that would go on for the bass, or the drums would kind of be unchanged in some cases for 5 or 6 minutes, but they keep adding things on top of that. So it would change sonically. These songs, for the most part, and again, there are examples here and there in various songs, but for the most part, it was relatively the same idea from beginning to end. And it just, for my ears, didn't really go anywhere a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's the challenge I had with it is I enjoy it. I think it's something I can put on in a car when I'm driving, or if, you know, you're just outside hanging around. Like, I think it's a kind of thing that you can put on there. It's good music and I enjoy it. But
it doesn't have to foreground itself. Like,
I struggle to say that it's a great album. But then the other thing that you have to keep in mind is like what this type of music is and what it's trying to accomplish. And it's not, this is the challenge of this entire podcast, or that Rolling Stone would have, is this music is meant to be played in a club where people are dancing. So a 7 minute long song is great. A 7 minute long song that doesn't change its beat for 7 whole minutes is perfect.
That was the other side of the coin to my "it's bloated," because I was thinking back to what Gia said on the Janet Jackson when we did the Janet Jackson album, and she was like, you have to put yourself in the position of thinking about where the music would have been played. And when I did that, I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I would want to listen to "Lose Yourself to Dance" for another 3 minutes.
But here's what I don't get on that. Like, I agree with that point, but what I don't get is, like, if this was this kind of a big album that was sort of a guilty pleasure for a lot of people and it was, you know, 498th on the list, fine. But there are a lot of albums that sort of work as dance albums, like in clubs, that don't receive the critical acclaim that this one has. So that's where it doesn't really square for me.
It almost has that feeling. I know I was making fun of, Springsteen, but it almost has that feeling of, these are these guys that you know well who are doing something, and they're doing something different, and that's why you should listen to them. And that's kind of my point. Like, to me, I do think that this is, it's them doing something different, but does that automatically make it, does someone you know doing something different make it great, or does that make it just interesting in their career? You know, like, if Springsteen had done that album and then went full electronic and did literally produce this album, because this is 70s and 80s, he kind of sounds right. Like, I mean, theoretically he could have done that. People would be like, wow, that's crazy. And it would kind of make more sense because it would be just such a crazy, like, switch back and forth. But these guys, I think we should
clip this part.
I don't know.
At it this way. Here's where I cut
everything Eamon's saying. Okay, I get it, Sonia. I see what's Eamon's happening. Podcast.
I'd be very curious to see where it goes in this scenario. So, say if you look at, maybe we'll sort of use a Switzerland, like a neutral compare, Radiohead. So, okay, computer, they start to get a bit electronic. I think a lot of the, you know, Aphex Twin types that were around at the time, and DJ Shadow, and I said, oh, nice try. Like, what are you trying to do? But the next album, they went further and they kind of started to find their own style within that kind of melodic but heavily electronic. I'm curious to see if Daft Punk had done another album after this, if this was kind of the one where they dipped their toe in the waters of live instrumentation, then after they're kind of comfortable in it, they do another album, and then they're kind of fusing what they're really good at with this, and then it becomes something compelling and different and interesting. It might not have, but that's what I'd be curious to hear. This, to me, especially as sort of a finale for their career, at least to date, feels kind of empty as a way to go out.
I have a theory about that exact thing that you just said. I think that this album comes out of a previous experience. I think that this is taking something else, and that is the Tron Legacy soundtrack. It took them like 2 years. They worked with a full orchestra, and they had never done that kind of thing before, and they were trying to merge their kind of more electronic music with orchestral music, and it took them, they've talked about how challenging of an experience that was for them to kind of make that all work out. And I wonder whether this is them saying, okay, well, it took us a long time, but we figured out how to do it there. We really like 1970s, 1980s music. Can we do something that feels like this again? Can we go work with live, musicians? It's not just sampling. It's not electronic stuff. Let's get live musicians in a studio, but do it about 70s and 80s music rather than an orchestra.
That's a great point. The thing I think it's missing that they didn't quite capture or grasp, and maybe they would have had they sort of carried it forward or carried it through, is that the best kinds of dance and soul and sort of funk music has some elements of spontaneity to it and some human aspects. Like we've talked about the James Brown James Brown just kind of grunts or, you know, shrieks or whatever, like just something in there that sort of breaks apart just the steady tempo, the really good bass, the clean guitar. There's got to be some sort of passion in there. And it's completely absent in this album. So again, when you're listening to it as sort of like a disco dance funk album, there's nothing, I mean, songs are, you know, they're fun and catchy, but there's nothing kind of really, like I said, spontaneous or really sort of organic about it. It's all very plastic. And maybe that's the artistic statement. I don't know, but it's screaming out for some kind of life to my ears.
Did the two of you feel like they had captured, because they kind of went into it with the mission statement of 1970s, you know, an ode to 1970s, 1980s music. Do you think they effectively captured that sound, even if it's not, as you said, Nathan, it's not really, it doesn't feel live or spontaneous or anything like, you know, if it doesn't feel like that, did they get the kind of feel down?
It feels like they distilled, like if you were going to make a fake greatest hits of the 70s and 80s album, it felt like they distilled the principles of the music.
Yeah,
I almost feel if I knew how to run sort of an AI program well enough today, and if I told it, can you compose a 6-minute funk disco song, it would spit out something very similar to this. So yes, they
didn't
achieved it.
Didn't that just happen with Drake? With
oh yeah, it happens every day. It's like how I spend hours on YouTube listening to just, let's hear Freddie Mercury sing Yesterday by the Beatles. Like, oh, interesting. Let's hear, anyway. Yes, they did a good job of capturing it, but there's just nothing that sort of feels exciting or new or advanced. And I feel that because the name Daft Punk is on the album, you kind of all of a sudden automatically elevate it in your mind. And if you just sort of separate that name from the songs, there's nothing there that makes me really jump out of my seat.
Do you think the raising of Daft Punk's name predates this album, or is it because of this album?
I mean, they're on the list for an earlier album too. I think that they are a kind
but are of they on along. For an are they on for the earlier album because of this album?
I don't think so.
That's sort of what the question is.
I don't think they are. I think they were considered relatively important before this album came out. Well, I could be
news
wrong
to me.
Because apart from this album, I'm not a gigantic Daft Punk head. Daft Punk
and the soundtrack, the Tron soundtrack.
Yes.
My memory sort of anecdotally is that they sort of became critical darlings after this. Like they were popular and respected, but they weren't sort of seen as like these really serious, thoughtful musicians until this album. And maybe it was overcorrecting because they didn't get the credit people thought they deserved on previous albums. And they thought, oh, wow, this is actually a really good body of work. And we should sort of really honor them with this swan song and sort of give them the credit that they didn't receive earlier, and they might have overcorrected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing I think is you talked about like the lack of spontaneity. The thing that kind of gave me pause when I was reading a little bit about how it was put together, they do use live instrumentation, but Chili Gonzalez, who is plays keyboards and is on a couple of these songs, said that he went in and kind of recorded the stuff they told him to record. And he was like, I don't know, they're just going to do something with it. They'll just like chop it up. And like, that was the feeling that they just edited the hell out of this. So while they didn't do as much sampling, what they did was they essentially created like bespoke samples. They were like, come in, record this specific thing that I want you to record. And then we will mix this into the song and it will all fit in this crazy world we're building. But it was kind of similar to, and the result is you end up getting the take that was perfect. You end up getting everything is perfect and it's perfectly placed.
Isn't that kind of what disco was about though too? Like in my very cursory research suggested that it was more about the producer and less about the musicianship itself. And I'm thinking back also to like prog rock, like the Brian Eno album we listened to, where he was just taking like little samples of sounds and toots and whatever and turning them into something.
It's just weird to be like the thing, though. It's weird for it to be the thing that they like hold out as like, they did live instrumentation. And it's like, but the way they did it was...
I didn't even know.
Yeah. It's like a very weird way. Like,
oh, and so what?
Yeah.
It's the way that Dr. Dre does a lot of his, like they're officially samples because he's essentially lifting lines that other musicians have created. But he has most times his own musicians come in, play those riffs or those pieces that somebody else would typically just copy and literally sample. He has musicians go in and play those riffs. So it's either slowed down a little bit organically and then he kind of manipulates it, but it's a similar style that he deploys too.
Very knowledgeable.
Was he doing that before this?
Or? Well, yes, he must've been actually, because this was out in what, 2013?
2013, that's correct, Nathan.
Yes, thank you, Sonia. You still have control of the board. I only know that because I saw a documentary on Dre recently that was quite good. So good that I can't remember the name, so I can't really recommend it to anybody. But look up, just Google Dr. Dre documentary, and I'm sure it'll come up.
So Daft Punk's members, they do sing, or at least vocalize?
I think vocalize is probably more accurate.
Yeah, but vocoderize. But the most recognizable vocals on the album are from guests. Do you think recording with so many vocalists is a benefit or a detriment to building an album? Either one of you. Neither one of you is moving.
I think it's a little bit of who cares. I mean, like they're choosing their friends, I guess. I don't know.
People who were active in the eras that they were. Yes.
Yeah. And, like I thought I actually liked the little Giorgio piece. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting. Yep. I'm not a huge Julian Casablancas fan, but I thought the song was fine.
Maybe because it doesn't sound like Julian Casablancas.
Because it feels like they wasted him.
Well, right? in a way, by saying
we're going to have this person sing, and then what we're going to do is we're going to have this person sing, but we're going to screw around with the vocals so much that you would have a tough time knowing that it was that person.
I think you could still tell it was him.
Yeah, but it's still weird. I mean no one went out and was like, hey, Sinatra, come here. We're going to put like a Alvin and the Chipmunks effect over your voice.
Is crying about it. Like, you know, I'm sure he was thrilled to be a part of such an momentous amazing occasion. Project. Yes.
He was probably thrilled to be relevant again. It had been a while at that point.
Ooh, I'm getting hot in here.
All right.
All the Casamania, the Blankomaniacs are going to come after us now.
No, they're going to come after you, pal.
we rise as a team and we fall as a team, right?
That's true. That's right.
I don't know. I think we jettison the weakest link.
It's him you want.
I think.
But I do feel like... It makes the album more listenable, and so like, I mean, if could you imagine this if it was just them? Like,
I agree.
What would they do?
I do. Normally, I'm not a huge.
They would
fan.
Do Motherboard, which is a piece of shit.
That's the whole point. Is that if it was an album of just the Daft Punk singing and sort of vocalizing throughout the entire, it'd be a little bit thin after a while. So, certain vocalists on this album might miss, but I mean, if Get Lucky was entirely those kind of weird computer voices, it probably wouldn't work. It sort of syncs in other areas with the guest vocalist, and it can be a bit uneven because there's no sort of predictability. But given the predictability of their voices as the bass line, I don't mind the variety.
Did either of you have a favorite vocalist or vocal performance? Sonia?
I mean, you kind of have to go with like Pharrell Williams, right?
I didn't, but okay. You can.
Well, I guess I will.
Because you have to.
I painted myself into a corner. Yeah. I thought his songs were fun. And,
they're definitely fun.
I like this Panda Bear fellow as well, the Doing It Right song.
Mr. Bear? Oh, yeah. He turned in a very good performance. I know Miss Panda, but...
P. Diddy?
Yeah.
No, that's a different fellow.
What about you, Nathan?
Well, I like the best vocal performance. I like Touch featuring Paul Williams.
Yes.
But my favorite song Mm-hmm. Like with
oh, just, we're not there yet. We're well, not.
But
in
I
that.
Think it's sort of one and the same because I like okay. the melody mm-hmm. and to have a mm-hmm. melody with vocals. You got. I mean, the vocals sort of go hand in hand with the melody. Is Instant okay. Crush with Julian Casablancas.
Oh,
I love that melody.
That's
I
just thought that was a turn.
Really, really good song. It's tough yeah. to say it's the best vocal because it's not really a vocal. And not just because, you know, as Sonia would say, Julian Casablancas is singing it. It feels almost like they've turned the vocals into, and I mean, the vocals are always an instrument to a certain extent, but it feels like they really instrumentalized the vocal in that song. So it's almost like another sort of, you know, guitar line or some sort of melodic instrument going over mm-hmm. top of it. But in terms of just pure, what we consider kind of a standard vocal, I like Touch featuring Paul Williams.
Yeah.
That was a cool song. It was yeah. like very, very show tunesy, very yeah. Broadway. And also a little bit of ABBA. Felt a little bit of ABBA.
I remember being surprised by that song, by that friend that I'd mentioned. That friend that I'd mentioned a while ago kind of saying you like the best song on this album though is this one, and I, you know, like, and he chose that, and I wonder whether it's because it's like one of the few, maybe the only song, I mean, I guess the Pharrell Williams ones are not like crazy effects on his voice, but there's like a grittiness, like a real rawness to his voice mm. and it doesn't get that same treatment and when it does get an effect on it, I almost feel it's like to put you off balance. Like it's like weird. It's like over distortion to make it sound like something is getting screwed up. It's mm-hmm. not like, you know, making it higher or making it sound like a guitar or something weird.
Yeah. And I'd be curious to know, and there may be no reason, it could just be random, but you know, why that one was left mostly untouched mm-hmm. and alone, whereas every other vocal for the most part was severely manipulated. Like there, it was clearly a conscious decision and they might've just thought, well, he sounds very, very different from everybody else. So we'll just leave it. And that sounds different, but it just feels mm-hmm. like there's gotta be something more to it. And I don't know what it is. I'd be curious to find out though.
Can I talk about my favorite song now?
Sure. Why don't you talk about your favorite song?
Which I think is probably not everyone's favorite, but, and I didn't enjoy the whole song. So let me just put those okay. caveats out there.
This is actually a big change for you because usually it's like you pick seven songs, yeah. but now you're picking a fraction of a song.
This yeah, is... I know. There's another plot twist. This is the cliffhanger episode. Lose Yourself to Dance is a real toe tapper when you're walking the dog, when you're mm-hmm. doing the dishes. And I think it's the vocals for sure, which is why when I was looking at that when I said Pharrell Williams or Pharrell, I think as you called him earlier, Nathan.
I believe, yes.
But I think it's also the guitar. It had a real, like Nile Rodgers on guitar, mm-hmm. like a real funk sound, which I really liked. And that whole song, well, two thirds of that song reminded me very much of Prince. And I really enjoyed yeah. that. But there was like a part that's in that song that just felt a little bit bloated too, where I'm like, okay, I'm just doing this again.
Yeah, how long is that one? That one's
5:53.
Not... So, yeah, I should know. Like, I do with all the stuff we've said about the instrumentation. I do think some of the guitar stuff is absolutely fantastic on here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talk all the time about the opening song on albums, like no, you know, like that, like right off the start, yep. just feels like an explosion. With guitar, like that feels that's great. That the rest of that song kind of gets like it's one of those like, oh, okay, now we're just going to repeat for the next 8 minutes, I guess.
They need to give you time to recover.
Yeah, but like that immediate explosion right off the start is great, I thought. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of examples of guitar doing really well in this whole album, but it's I feel like it's not enough to, I don't know, not enough to make it like consistently interesting if you're going to say, as I have done, listen to it a dozen times in a short time frame. It will make you lose track. Do we need to talk about lyrics at all? I feel like this is the thing. This album doesn't have half the songs barely have lyrics, or they have like a handful of lyrics that repeat themselves. Like,
which, you know, yeah. to your point earlier, like that's kind of what you want when you're in
exactly yeah.
a club.
This has made it tough to judge this.
Yeah, I don't think lyrics are obviously a I was going to say a major focus, but I don't even think a focus, which is fine because I don't think that that's what you expect from this kind of music. And, you know, I like a good lyric and I can sort of even take lyrics over melodies sometimes, but I also recognize that on the flip side, sometimes the lyrics literally don't matter.
Yeah. Like here, take my shirt and just go ahead and wipe up all the sweat and lose yourself to dance.
Well, I mean, wait, you guys didn't get Let the Music In Tonight, Give Life Back to Music repeated 15 times in a row. that didn't really get it.
I understood what they meant on the 14th time. And then by the 15th time, I could sing it with conviction because I finally understood.
I look at there's a website called Genius, which has lyrics. Yep. It has the lyrics and then it, where possible, it gives explanations. And for this one, it had some explanation, but it didn't seem to have an explanation that was tied to any quotes. It just someone was explaining what they thought the song was about. And the description of the song for that song was Daft Punk telling you to feel the music because they've meticulously crafted this album.
I love that. I love Genius, the site, by the way, because of that. Just sometimes they try to explain things that don't need to be explained. And my favorite example of that is Gangster's Paradise by Coolio. I looked that up one time and I was just going through it. And it's like, there's the line where he said, I'd be treated like a punk, you know, that's unheard of. And I clicked on the link to see what it meant. It said, Coolio is respected in the streets and not treated like a punk. I'm like, oh, that's what that line meant. Finally, we've cracked the code. Yes. He is respected in the streets and not treated like a punk.
I did think there was one line that reminded me of our good friend Michael Simon, which is touch. I remember touch. Pictures came with touch because he spoke for at length about carrying a picture, that, you know, photos around with him. And and I do think that the Giorgio on Marauder one had some interesting ideas in what he was saying.
That was great, but that's I mean, I guess you count those as lyrics, but that's almost like it is a story, essentially.
And that one, like the once you free your mind about a concept of harmony and of music being correct, you can do whatever you want. And, you know, like that idea, I think you can apply to a lot of different things, but you're talking about a song that's 9 minutes and 4 seconds long.
Yeah. You know, like, gotta talk about at least something.
I can't imagine that one being played in a club. If anyone like is listening to this and is like, hey, I've heard this in a club. I mean, it's like 3 minutes of like an old guy talking about music.
I don't want to know what goes on in those kinds of clubs.
Yeah.
if that's club music.
All right. I'll tell you what my favorite song is just because.
So excited.
You know, we feel like we're at this point. There's something about Contact that I love. You turn it up loud and you try to decide whether your brain will explode before it cuts out.
Wow.
That's pretty fun. But my favorite is definitely Touch. The vocals, I think, are excellent. It feels set apart from the rest of the album.
Feels like something you would enjoy singing also.
Oh, I definitely sing that like freaking crazy. Yeah, I'm not going to do it now, but like I definitely.
But maybe for a minute.
You have the karaoke version on your phone.
Yeah, that's.
Let Eamon take over.
Yeah.
But aside.
It, you know, there appears to be a message in that song too. The music has a lot of variety in that song. Like it's kind of a weird outlier song, honestly, for this album. So you guys think this should be on the list or not? I got a feeling I know where the answer is, but
I'll say it for the record that I don't think it should be on the list. I think it has, you know, three or four pretty good songs. But I mean, if that's the bar, like how many albums accomplish that? Like 5,000, 10,000? Like we're talking about the top 500 here. I mean, for Pete's sakes, surely the bar is higher than, you know, three good songs or four good songs. And so it's a decent album. It's enjoyable, but there's just nothing about it that really grabs me that says, yeah, this is one of the best albums ever recorded. So no.
And Tina Turner's not on the list.
Yeah, this is some bullshit.
Tina Turner is not on the freaking list.
She'll be on it in the next version.
She better be on it.
She's probably going to be like top 10 all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Classic Rolling Stone.
Anyway, thanks everybody for listening.
Sonia, what about you? Do you think this should be on the list?
No. I mean, it's for the same reasons that Nathan said. Like, I think it's a fun album when you're mopping the floors, cleaning the house, whatever. But that shouldn't constitute the top, what is it, in the top 300?
top three. It's inside the top 300. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems a bit rich.
Yeah, I think that's in a nutshell. I think it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's especially enjoyable if you don't have to pay super close attention, or if you're just kind of moving around. I remember when Gia during that Janet Jackson episode like took a 20-minute dance break. That was interesting. But like she said, you know, you got to get up and dance and move around and feel that music in order to really experience it. I think the same is true of this. I feel like there's something kinetic about this album, but at the same time, by the measures we usually use, it shouldn't be on the list. It has basically no good lyrics. It's got a couple of decent.
I think I shared some really good ones.
I said basically. I also shared some, but there's not a lot there. There's, you know, the album itself, which it's is no the biggest Nebraska. Thing. Bloated. I don't know. It's tough because it's not meant. Like this is where I really run into problems with this, with this list, with this podcast, with all of this stuff, because it's achieving the things that this type of music is supposed to achieve. So do you judge it based on what this type of music is supposed to achieve, or what you've determined is a good album, which is effort and time put into the lyrics?
I don't think the people who are voting for this list, I don't know that they're thinking about any of those things.
Oh, I don't think they are.
Certainly not consistently.
And we are, but no one cares. That's right.
We have a rubric.
here's what I'll say, that to sort of as a peace offering almost to Sonia, is that I can make, even though I wasn't a huge fan of Nebraska, I can make a stronger argument in all sincerity that Nebraska, I can understand why it is on the list versus this one. Like I might not thoroughly enjoy Nebraska. I might not even like Nebraska, but you know, there, I can see people saying that they were influenced by Nebraska. It sort of showed people how they could make lo-fi music. Maybe like there's some aspects there where even if I don't agree, I can see sort of the hooks there. I can't see anybody 10 years out saying that, you know, the reason I made this album is because I heard that Daft Punk album, and I wanted to build on that, or I was just blown away when I heard that. It's just an album that had some good songs on it. They probably enjoyed it, but it's not one that's going to be sort of foundational in their sort of musical evolution or their own sort of creation.
I want to put an olive branch out to Daft Punk fans, because I don't want to get inundated with hate on social media. I like this album. I don't dislike this album.
I like it too.
I've listened to it a billion times.
Our problem is with the Rolling Stone Daft Punk fans.
Yeah. I think it's a good album. I have trouble saying it's a great album or one of the greatest, more so one of the greatest of all time. Certainly one of the 300 greatest of all time.
5th, 5th.
Yeah. Like that's my issue. You guys want to hear one bad opinion?
Yes, I'm dying to hear it.
We've likely provided three for Daft Punk fans. Yeah. So,
well, let's see let's see how much this one bad opinion lines up with everything we've said for the last 40 minutes. Daft Punk is my favorite band. I was so excited when I heard a new album was coming out. I love the powerful punch they deliver physically and to the emotions. Well, it isn't here. It is slow, sounds like disco, 80s, a lot of talking, rambling. I don't care about your personal life, not when I'm paying for music. Wonder if this is music they put together decades ago and think someone wants to hear this junk now. Last tune was okay. Guess I paid $10 for one tune. That's from Alice Arcturus in 2013 on Amazon.
Paying for music, what a sucker.
Yeah. In 2013, there was many other options.
Now, where is Alice now, I wonder?
Yeah.
Probably bankrupt.
Okay, would you recommend this to other people, and why, Sonia?
If you just want to listen to music while you're washing the floors or driving in your car.
This is the alternate album name. Music for Washing the Floors by Daft Punk.
Random floor washing tunes. Yeah. I would, as sort of like a background kind of music, but not for any sort of critical leanings, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. Nathan?
Yeah, I would recommend it. I would just I would hope that whoever I'm recommending it to isn't sort of encumbered by the weight that comes with it being one of the top 500 albums of all time, because I think that unfairly raises expectations and you start listening for things that just aren't there. But if they're just looking for decent music and they're new to North America or new to music period and haven't heard Get Lucky, like there's going to be some things in there like that's a really fun song, and it's like it is a fun song, there's several fun songs, but it's just not one of the top 500 albums of all time.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's fun to listen to. I enjoy listening to it. I just don't think it holds up to like greatest in history level of scrutiny that we kind of hold everything to, right? Like, I mean, we've talked about a Neil Young album we didn't think should be on here. We've talked about, you know, like there's a lot of things that maybe don't quite meet the level, especially when Tina Turner's not on the list. Sorry. But you know, have a pool party, put this thing on. It'll be perfect. Long car trip, put this thing on. It'll be perfect.
Pass the charcuterie.
Yeah, it's fun. It's worth a listen. Even if it's not great, whatever that means. That's all for today. Thank you, as always, to Nathan and Sonia. Check out Record Roulette on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at RR Music Pod. Rate and review this podcast wherever you can. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts, or listen at recordroulettepodcast.com. Music in this episode is from Lemon Music Studio. Thank you for listening to Record Roulette. Until the next spin, goodbye.